This is the July 3 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day are Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services. She's in Clarion, Iowa. Mike Zuzlow is with us from globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. And Dan Zwicker is here from Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media and University of Illinois Extension. Find us online at willag.org, WILLAG.org. Let's get a list of topics that we should cover for the day. I think, Mike Zuzlow, I'll start with you, please.
Well, I think probably the crop tour that I've been taking in the midst of a vacation would be a good thing to address with the listeners, Todd, and the amazing uniformity, even though this crop is late, how uniform this crop seems to be from Missouri all the way through Michigan and Ohio. So that'd be something maybe to take up, especially after the acreage report.
Dan Zwicker, on your list?
I don't know if there's anything other than the controversy surrounding the USDA planted acreage numbers.
And Sue Martin?
Well, I think we have to cover, the crop conditions and in various areas and how much of this weather is going to start to create it to come around that the crop will improve. How fast will it improve?
Let's start with Mike Zuzlow in that case. Mike, you've been on a crop tour. You say that what you've seen is awfully even. I take it that's a pretty good surprise to you?
Yeah, two big things that were surprising is the uniformity agronomically in this crop from Missouri, Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan. Those four states were amazing. They're all, I'd say, 70-75% of what we've seen on the tour. And on our trip, we ended up going to Ann Arbor, Michigan from Atchison. We went through West Lafayette, up through Shipshawana, and then up to Battle Creek, and then over to Ann Arbor. Came, and that was for a baptism, and then we came back down through Toledo on 75 to Dayton. And then we just parked the vehicle in Lawrenceville, Illinois, and came across Indianapolis, Terre Haute, down through Vincennes and then over on Route 50 to Lawrenceville. And 70% of what we saw in that area was Missouri, Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan was amazingly the same size, probably maybe calf high corn and probably 5-inch top end as far as height of beans, Todd. And so it looked like every part of those four states were essentially 40 days behind, and they all, for the most part, got into the fields. Now, the interesting thing was on the way to the places we've gone, and we're heading back to Atchison, going through Effingham and Taylorville and up through Springfield and then back and back up into the Hannibal route on the northern Missouri, like the way we came. But I have not seen any tasseling corn until we got to Vincennes. And Vincennes is roughly, other than parts of Illinois, roughly the garden spot right now. But in any case, it's an amazingly uniform crop, and it's an amazingly short crop. And I was very surprised and struck that the prevent plant acres that were in northwestern Ohio and central Indiana were there. But everywhere else, it was not as bad as I thought it would be. And so I don't disagree with USDA having above 90 million acres, but I think 90.5 is probably the top end that I will go with from here on out based upon this crop tour.
Not 95, but 90.5, right?
That's correct, yes.
Sue Martin, in your area of the world, can you tell me about the crop there and probably ought to remind us where Clarion is exactly?
Well, we're located on Highway 3 in north central Iowa, and I will say we're in a garden spot where we're at. Our crop, just like Mike said, amazingly, the crop is very uniform around here, but late, looks lush and green. Even the beans are getting a little bit of size to them. But you don't have to go super far. I would say if you gravitate up towards the Minnesota border or northwest Iowa, the crop doesn't look the same. It's coming around, but it is way behind. And we're behind ourselves, but not like, I would say within 40 miles of us from there on to the Minnesota border and to the northwest corner And even down towards Des Moines, it isn't that far along, because these have all been very wet areas that are surrounding us. We just happen to miss a lot of it.
Now, I'm going to hazard a guess, and while Mike's talking about calf-high corn, or knee-high, relatively speaking, by the 4th of July, you're talking about chest-high corn, maybe?
I would say probably yes. I would not be surprised it'll be chest-high.
All right, so a big difference in the eastern and the western Corn Belt. Have you heard much from farmers in Nebraska about their crop? Because I think it may be as far along as anything.
It is. They're another garden spot. And they got their crops in even a little bit faster than we did. And so their crops look pretty good if they haven't been affected by any storms. And I don't think they've had much. They've been, their crops look lush, green, come along pretty well. So they're a little bit more further along. I would have to venture to guess if there's any state that basically is like fairly close to normal, maybe just a hair behind, but pretty close to normal, I would have to say it's Nebraska.
Hey Dan, it sounds like this is a race against time now as it relates to the growing season.
Yeah, but you know, when it comes July, you know, is normally hot, just like when it comes January, it's normally cold. So, you know, unless we have a very unusual year, and I think the models, I think, are kind of indicating maybe something closer to normal on temperatures, maybe slightly cooler, depending upon, I guess, which day you look at the models. But, you know, normal temperatures in July, normal type rainfall in July, I'm sure this crop will make some pretty good advances in the next 30 days. I mean, the only thing that would, I think, send it a real loop if we all of a sudden we had some kind of pattern that was abnormally cooler than normal, something like maybe 10 degrees below cooler than normal. I mean, I suppose that's possible, but I think all of the models are indicating that right now we've kind of shifted to something more a normal southern, you know, summer weather pattern. So my guess is that over the next 30 days, things are probably going to, you know, look pretty good. Then it starts getting trickier, is, you know, how much advancement did we do during that 30 days? We're still going to be behind for the year, and then still, you know, given the average date, or given the large percentage of the crop planted, you know, corn anyway, planted after June 1st, and a large percentage of the soybeans looks to be, have been planted after the longest day of the year. So, and soybeans are more light sensitive. So they've lost out on all those light days where we had days getting longer during the month of, you know, April and May, where now they're trying to grow when you got the days actually getting shorter. So it's going to be an interesting year. But, you know, July weather and August weather is still going to be very important. Probably what kind of yield we actually end up, and probably, you know, maybe that weather pattern all the way into September is going to be somewhat important, especially we need a longer growing season. And if anything would come along to make it shorter, then we've got a large percentage of this crop that could be damaged, you know, if we would have a frost 2 or 3 weeks early, when you take into account that the crop is upwards of 6 weeks behind. So it's going to get tricky as we go into that August-September timeframe, I'm sure.
Hey, Mike Suzalo, with the exception of northern Illinois, you have been through the worst of the late-planted growing areas of the United States, possibly South Dakota as well, though that late planting came much earlier in the year. Still, you're at 90.5 million acres. What do you think the intended acres actually were for corn, if that's the case? And is the 91.7 that USDA dropped out in the report not so far off?
No, and I'm trying to blend the two together. I don't know what, I'm trying to get a top-end mindset to get away from the idea of trying to get away from the idea of the 92.8 or the 92. I don't believe it's that high. So what would the top end be? What I'm doing this year, Todd, is working a top end acreage number for planted, and then I'm going to use a 90% for harvested acres, and then use crop conditions and some of the other formulations that I use for national yield. But I'm going to go from like a 92-93% of planted acres for my harvested number down to 90% and kind of try and catch it in the bucket there. But I think if the key to me continues to be, and we talked about this maybe last week, how close are we to a 13 billion bushel corn crop? Are we at 90.5 million acres planted, 81.5 harvested, and a 162.5 yield? And that puts you at a 13.2, or are we just below a 160 national yield on that acreage base, and we're right at 13 billion bushels? And why I like 13 billion bushel numbers, because once I can hone in on a 13 billion or less production number, it gets harder and harder to cut demand to the point where you can't get above a 1.5 billion bushel carryover. And for me, if the market decides we can't get above a 1.5 billion bushel carryover, we should be able to test those recent highs in December corn, especially as we go through wheat harvest and get that monkey off our back.
So it's about yield, some about acreage, but mostly about yield for you at this point.
I believe that, and I think Wednesday's market showed that. I think Dan hit it on the nose with that wetter, cooler pattern coming in. I think the market showed that in aces and in spades on Wednesday. I don't believe it was as much technical based other than the gap being filled, which we talked about last Friday. I really think it was the fact that the crop conditions are not showing improvement yet on the updates that we got this week, and the trade saw wetter, cooler, and I saw low 40s for lows in parts of areas that aren't far away from Sue's office. And I think the market realizes that low 40s is not going to get you the heating degree days you need, and that takes you back to yield, yeah, essentially. And then the last thing I'll say is the grain stocks, I think, really came back and played a role in this week's market, because all of a sudden we saw places in Ohio and places in Indiana and Decatur, Illinois, really pop on cash corn. So not only are farmers holding back on 18 sales, but the cash grain market could be tighter than what we assume based upon those grain stocks numbers for corn. So I think that was a real helpful piece, and that is part of the reason why I was encouraged when we talked after the report last week, is we hadn't really gone through all the numbers yet.
So have you done your spreadsheets, and what do they look like for the supply and demand tables, in particular for supply, meaning yield and acreage?
Well, when I look at the yields, I'm thinking that our yields are, I agree with Mike that the crops seem pretty uniform. When you look across them, and you can certainly see across the whole fields right now. But I tend to think that the yields are not going to be what everyone thinks when it's all said and done. I think that we are, and it depends on weather. If our weather turns cooler and we tend to come out of this hotter period in July and we go into August and we turn cooler, don't know if we'd have to be super wet, but cooler, I think it's going to slow up this crop again, and it just won't make it in time into fall. And I know that the concern this year, I continue to think that this year is so similar to 1974. And in that year, I can remember it so well because the Farm Progress Show was within 40 miles of me, and we had a frost on Labor Day weekend and a killing freeze on September 21st that took in much of the state. And, you know, beans were black and corn smelled like silage. And I can remember that, but the market topped that year on the first week of October. So, you know, I'm looking at it. It was the first time we ever had $4 corn. And I just have a fear. It's been so long since we've had an early frost freeze. But I have a fear that this year, if this weather does not turn warmer and bring on and then give us a consistent dose of nice little showers, not deluges, but showers to keep the soil from being like cement, I fear that if we turn colder, which I'm hearing we're going to, and then through August, and then we get rain with that, I'm afraid our crop is going to be slowed down on the corn in order to make it as it needs to, even on a normal frost. And then you look at soybeans, and of course, you had 41 million acres left to plant when they finished that survey. And those 41 million acres, a lot of them went in after the summer solstice. Days are getting shorter, not longer. I'm afraid that that's going to weigh on yields.
Dan Zwicker, what does your cycle work tell you about this year?
Well, my cycle work here, the way I'm looking at it right now, this week and maybe into next week, we may have done it. You know, we had a nice weekly reversal to the upside in corn today. Well, I guess we got Friday to go through, so, you know, we'll see what Friday goes. But as of the close Wednesday, we've got a weekly reversal to the upside on corn with that strong performance that corn had on Wednesday. Now, beans, we're still away from a higher finish for the week, since beans took their major hit on Monday, whereas corn took its hit shortly right after that USA report there on Friday. Now, I think both of these markets are kind of making what I would call, in corn's case, a 6 to 7 week cycle low in here. So I think it's getting itself set up for a, you know, maybe 4 to 5 week rally into August. I think soybeans are kind of making a kind of a 7 to 8 week type cycle low, maybe, and then they would also try to make a good run into August. So I look at my cyclical work, and it kind of tells me that over the next week here, or by the end of next week anyway, we should have an uptick in place and ready to rally, you know, into middle August. And I'm sure it's going to be driven by speculation that, you know, USDA is going to do some major acreage changes on the August report. It's going to be driven by, you know, what the day-to-day weather forecasts are. I mean, I'm in Houston right now, and we're at 81 degrees. Now, for the most part, that's about 20 degrees below normal. I mean, Houston should be 99 and 100 with 100% humidity. And it's actually very pleasant in the evenings here in Houston. So it's very cool, at least in the southern parts of the growing region. But, you know, we're going to be harvesting corn in Texas, if we haven't already, in some areas, because they got it planted early. And the crop should be pretty good because we've had a lot of moisture in Texas. But, you know, in the bigger scale of things, Texas doesn't count, you know. So, I think acreage is still going to be a big issue. I mean, you know, I've been a critic of USDA's government reports for some time, mostly after all my fraternity brothers left the NAS area, then I could get critical with them. So it's only been recently, in the sense I've been kind of retired from a major employment with a major company. But they would make, I think USDA could make themselves a whole lot easier on themselves on this acreage report, if the headline would have been, you know, as of June 1st, 84% of the crop was planted, or X amount of acres were planted. And the farmers intended to plant an additional X amount of acres. And that same way with on soybeans. Instead of coming out with the numbers, if they just came out with the headline that, you know, as of June 1st, because this is supposed to be a planted acreage report. It is not supposed to be an intentions report. The intentions report is in March. So it'd been a whole lot easier, I think, for them to just say, well, due to the extreme lateness of this crop planting season, because it's historical to anybody that's living today, that they just say, you know, on June 1st, we had the X amount million acres of corn planted. Farmers intend to plant an additional acres. And the same with beans. It'd been a whole lot easier and less controversial than coming out with the big numbers like they did and just send the market into a shockwave and unnecessary volatility. Let's put it that way, is the way I look at it.
So I have a quick question. It's kind of yes or no. Will USDA World Ag Outlook Board in the July WASDE, which is on Thursday next week, the 11th, change their acreage number away from the 91.7 that USDA NAS posted in the June acreage report? Yes or no, Dan?
I think so. I think common sense will prevail. But, you know, when it comes to academias, a bunch of PhDs sitting around a table talking, who knows what they'll come up with. But I think I'm hopeful that there's some reasonable common sense. They may not automatically go to the NAS number because the NAS number is more, it ended up being a much more of an intentions report than a planted acreage report. If it would have been a planted acreage report like it normally is, then the WASDE group would have went right to their number. But I think the WASDE group that sits around and tries to, you know, put together a balance sheet, I think common sense should prevail. And they may just stick with their number. I think they shaved it, what, down to 89? You know, they might even shave it a little more. I don't know.
So you're yes, they'll be at 91.7, or you're no, they'll be at a different number?
I think, I think they'll be at their number. I think they'll stay with their June number. I don't think they're going to automatically go to NAS. And they got a good reason not to go to NAS, is what I'm saying, is because only 84% of the crop was planted as of June 1st. So they've got a good reason to say, well, we're not necessarily going to go with NAS's number this time because it's too much of an intentions report compared to historical standards. So they got a good reason not to go to NAS. Now, NAS might get a little ticked off at that, but they got a good reason not to. You know, some common sense might come into play here. You know, there might be some people on that WASDE board that has some common sense, you know.
Mike, how about you?
I'm in agreement with Dan because there's talk of a resurvey by NAS. So why should the World Agricultural Outlook Board change their number if NAS is going to resurvey? And I don't know whether they've decided to or not to do it because I've been on the road. But I think, like we talked about with Chad Hart at Iowa State a couple weeks ago, I think we're in a situation where the World Agricultural Outlook Board has done their business in the corn and the June report, and they're going to focus a lot more on the soybeans in this upcoming report.
Sue Martin?
I agree with Mike. I think, too, that WASDE will tend to stick to their own numbers just because of the surveying that NAS is going to do in 14 states. That leaves a lot of uncertainty, and I think NAS will follow their own data. And I agree. It may be beans that they focus on more this time around.
The one caveat I would say on the acreage is if the RMA reports for prevent plant are high enough, they will change it.
And that's what Northey is talking about, probably high end of the 2 to 10 million historical average, yeah.
Yeah, but and I don't know how quickly those prevent plant numbers will come in, but Chad Hart on this program, when he was on a couple of weeks ago, he's from Iowa State, pointed us to the right website, because they're reported, so they're actual numbers. We can see them. I don't recall exactly what that website is, but it is possible to see them updated every day, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was RMA, I believe.
Yeah, it's an RMA number. It's an RMA yep. number. So we'll see how that goes. All right, so what are farmers to do, if anything? Sue Martin, what do you think they ought to do? Old crop and new crop, corn and soybeans.
I think with the old crop, I would take advantage of this hike in basis levels. I think that as you get into August, farmers are going to make a decision once they really start to see their crops come around, corn's pollinated, what have you, and they'll start thinking about harvest and thinking whether they need to clean out their bins or not. They'll have to make a decision in the area they're in as to the quality of corn they have being better with the old crop than what they might have as new. And maybe they move the new off the combine. But I think they need to take advantage of the basis levels that they're being given because they're inverted and they're very nice, and use these rallies and take advantage of that.
for beans?
You know, the bean market might be the one that could be your more bullish crop in the end. If we weren't worrying about a trade tariff situation, I would say beans could be the surprising factor here in the end when this is all said and done. I struggle because I'm so friendly corn longer term. But I think beans, too. You can't have corn going up in a big way and not have beans turning around and coming back with you. You know, if the right things happen here, this isn't over. We still have to get into September, and I fear we're looking at a year when we're going to have an early frost, possibly freeze. And even if it's on time, you know, normal, I think our crops are too slow, too laid back, and the weather services we carry that I have great respect for, we have three of them, and they're all talking a colder August and also a cool, wet fall. And so if we catch a hard freeze here, it's not going to be good. These crops won't be able to make it in time. I think it's a market that's still evolving in steps.
Mike Zuzulo, corn, soybeans, old and new crop.
Old crop corn, I think Sue's right on it with the old crop basis. If you haven't locked the basis in already, and that's probably going to be few and far between at this point. So I'd be on board with taking shots at really high basis levels, especially near those ethanol plants in, say, Greenville, Ohio, that are back to 480 corn again this week. New crop corn, I would wait until Friday's close to see exactly how the charts look, what the price is Friday's close versus where we were the day before the report or the close before the report, see how much we've made up. I'm like Sue, there's a lot of unwritten chapters on this book. One thing that I think really popped out to me this week was President Trump is becoming more vocal about wanting a weaker dollar until a trade deal's done with China and with the EU. Not only is he throwing around the currency manipulation comment for both the Chinese and the European Union, he's also been beating on the Fed really hard and threatening to let go of the Fed chairman or try and let go of the Fed chairman because he wants lower rates. And I think if there's going to be a currency war with China and a race to the bottom, he wants the dollar to be involved in that. And so the idea of a strong dollar policy that we've had in our history, you know, for the last 34 years, I think he's turning that to a soft dollar policy. And we haven't seen that reacted yet, except in the gold market at this point. So I'm willing to give this market some more time on the 19 corn and 19 beans. 18 beans are the key, I think, though, because of the new highs in the stock market, because of the crude oil market finding some support. I think it'd be better to be long on paper and beans than long in the bin, especially since we got that payment last year. So get over $9 beans in the cash market. I think you start peddling them out.
Dan Spicker?
I'm going to hold off on everything. I'm going to stick with my cyclical work. I guess I'm in the opinion after USDA gets done with their acreage adjustments, and then I think the yields are going to be closer to 20% below trend line than 10% below trend line. So I kind of feel both corn and soybean crops are going to come in underneath usage. And I would view that, even though we have large carryouts, especially in soybeans and wheat, that we're in a short crop seasonal pattern, and a short crop seasonal pattern would favor seasonal highs more so in the last 4 months of the year. So I guess I would be thinking August, September, October, November, maybe December. So at least into that August, September timeframe. And then because I just think it's going to take USDA all the way into January before we really find out what this yield is. So whatever the yields they come out with in August and that, I know it's a benchmark, but I think they're going to have to go through a grain stocks report, I think, to get this yield finalized. And we're not going to get that. We ain't going to see that until January. The advantage of having a late crop like we have is that their September 1st stocks number should be fairly accurate. So then they will be able to really back their way out of the December 1st stocks number and come up with a pretty solid yield. And it's going to take them, I think, all the way to the January report to get that number. So I kind of was lean toward a short crop and the seasonal pattern that short crops have their highs in the last 4 months of the year. More so than in the middle part of the growing year.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find and listen to the whole of our program online at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Mike Zuzula at GlobalAnalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas, Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas, and Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services out of Clarion, Iowa. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.